Gabe has to prove to his family that he is a responsible adult with his life together. And when he crosses paths with Katie at a dance studio showcase, perhaps he can strike a deal with her. They agree to a fake relationship for everyone else's sake, but what happens when they suddenly catch feelings? I'm Heather Songster, and this is Hopelessly Romantic. Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to another episode. I've got a treat for today's romantic adventure. Well, it's really a treat for me for a couple of reasons. Today we're going to read Katie's Catch by J.J. Sommers, the first novel in her Snapdragon series. This novel is special because it's our first novel by a local author, or at least one that I know for certain comes from an author here in my neck of the woods. I'm not sure if this book would have entered my radar had I not known about it beforehand. It's self-published, but happily, I was still able to purchase a paper copy from my big box bookstore of choice. It is possible that after a while, I might have seen it in my recommended purchases page while perusing for my next options for reviewing. But it was word of mouth that brought this novel to my attention. What makes this novel special is, not only is it a local author, but it was suggested to me by my pole dancing instructor as it was written by a friend of hers. Yes, you heard that correctly. I'll save most of the story for behind the page next week, so be sure to tune in. But the bare bones is, I've been taking pole dancing lessons for about a year now. It's a fun method of exercise, and I make no apologies for it. One of my instructors knew about my podcast, so she was very excited to recommend this novel to me. Why was she excited, you might ask? Because it is a body-positive romance that features around a pole dance studio. Essentially, it's right up our alley. So the moment I knew that I could buy it, I put it into my virtual cart and waited with bated breath for it to arrive at my door. And today, we get to read it. So enough of the backstory, it is time to dig deep into this book. Our cover is very, very different from most of the others that we've seen. It's not a manipulated, mashed-together Frankenstein photo, but actual art. It's a stylized picture of two people. There's our heroine looking at us with a sultry expression as she leans against a dance pole. Behind her is the hero, a fellow in a hoodie, smiling out at us as he holds a camera. This is absolutely a case of the author having a hand in that cover art, and I'm pretty happy about it. I only have a couple of nitpicks, like there's more detail in the woman's face and not enough in the guy's face, but overall, it's a solid cover. It establishes our characters very handily and tells us what we are going to get. The big standout feature is our heroine, of course. She's not scantily dressed as one might expect a pole dancer would dress. She's actually pretty covered up, but it's clear to us that she is what modern parlance calls plus-sized. I'm not really a fan of the term plus-sized, but I'm not sure if there's anything better. There are other phrases that, for me, they just feel patronizing, like fluffy or husky. Curvy isn't so bad, but it's not always inclusive. It's, you know, not every curvy girl is plus size, and not every plus size girl is curvy. They don't always correlate. And we've already all heard my plump rant. Plus size just kind of feels clinical. It is, however, how our heroine is described on the back of the book. And it's the best phrase we have right now. My feelings on the matter aren't really important. Our story begins with Katie nervously standing outside the Snapdragon pole studio, waiting for her friend to arrive. We get some exposition right off the bat with some inner monologue. Katie is recently divorced, and from the sounds of things, it wasn't exactly a supportive relationship. Her friend Annabelle has invited her to the studio to check out the showcase. Essentially, students and instructors at the dance studio occasionally put on a show to showcase their skills. Annabelle is pretty excited for it, and she's hoping that she can convince Katie to sign up for classes with her, but Katie isn't so sure. Katie met Annabelle through an online meetup for divorced women, and as Annabelle is a few years out from her divorce, she has some insight on how Katie's feeling at this stage. While Annabelle is excited, outgoing, all smiles, Katie is anxious and shy with some massively low self-esteem thanks to her ex-husband. Backstory illuminates exactly how toxic that relationship was, as Katie listens to the show MC explain about the different styles of pole dancing. There was more than one pole dance thing out there? Katie shuddered. Her main memory of pole dance was John taking her out to a strip club one time to spice up their marriage. Her ex-husband running commentary on every woman's body, comparing them to her own, had tainted the experience. It was hard enough for Katie not to compare her body to those of other women, and just remembering the strip club experience made her want to curl in on herself with shame. Did I say toxic? No, that asshole was straight up emotionally abusive. I appreciate this introduction to our character, however. It firmly establishes where she is, emotionally, and helps to explain why she might be hesitant to involve herself with pole dancing at all. I think a lot of women living in the mainstream might have the same approach here. Media does an excellent job of demonizing sex work, especially strippers and pole dancers, so when women are exposed to the idea that pole dancing could be entirely non-sexual, their biases might get in the way for them to fully explore the idea. Even today, you will still hear pole athletes clarify themselves with, "Oh, I pole dance, but it's not like I'm a stripper." They don't want the association with sex work, despite the fact that modern sport of pole dance was born in the strip clubs. And there's also the fact that there's another preconceived notion of strippers having rail-thin waists and massive button boobs. John is clearly one of those guys who think that every woman can look like those women if they simply apply themselves, and negs the woman in his life thinking it'll get her to do what he wants. And this is where we find Katie, already self-conscious about her appearance and packed with unpleasant memories associated with pole dancing. As the first performer takes the stage, Katie is blown away by what she sees, and what she sees is a woman, confident with herself, her body, and able to do amazing things with her body with no hesitation. What would it be like to have that kind of confidence, she wonders. After the first acts, up to intermission, Annabelle is already gunning to get Katie to take the 7-week beginner's course, but Katie is still hesitant. Not because she didn't want to be associated with, quote, sex work. That notion has been completely obliterated in her mind, thanks to the performers. No, she's scared. And that's understandable. She would love to be able to do those things. She just doesn't believe that she can. Not yet. Our next chapter introduces Gabe, a photographer that the studio owner had recruited to take photos of the showcase. He's primarily a wedding photographer, and while it's lucrative, it's a little dull for him. His partnership with the pole studio was an excellent way to challenge himself and break into more artistic ventures. We can see that he has some stress with his family. They don't exactly consider photographer as a viable career, but he's perfectly happy where he is. He decides to hit the restroom during intermission, and that's where he runs into Katie, almost literally. Katie thinks he hates her on sight because, one, that low self-esteem, and two, she nearly knocked into his very expensive camera. However, we can see Gabe doesn't hate her at all. Gabe returned to the green room. There were more beautiful women to photograph, but he found himself thinking about the one he just literally bumped into. He hadn't seen her at the studio before, and she definitely wasn't one of the performers, so it was likely that she was someone's friend or family member, or maybe just a pole hobbyist, someone who took classes once a week here or at another studio in town and then turned up to watch the showcase. With her dark brown, slightly wavy hair and rounded cheeks, Gabe could picture her fitting right into a Pre-Raphaelite painting in a sheer gauzy gown that, if he continued to think about it, would undoubtedly distract him from doing his job. This isn't quite Spark of Something, but Gabe is sincere about his attraction to Katie. I think it's also important to note that he is currently surrounded by beautiful women of all types, and it's Katie that's caught his attention beyond just an artistic eye. After the show ends, Annabelle has fully convinced Katie to join her for the beginner pole classes. Katie isn't sure she's going to get that confidence that the performers were showing off, but she's still going to try. She sees Gabe and points out his cuteness to Annabelle, while recounting the bumping episode, who all but throws Katie in his general direction. Katie obliges, but unfortunately caught Gabe in a bad moment. He's just received a text message from someone, and that someone is clearly not in his good graces. Katie mistakes his irritation as being directed at her and slinks away. Not a good start for our couple. We catch up with Katie while she's at work, and I hate to say that there is some telling instead of showing here. We are told that Katie is a recent addition to the community. She lived in Louisville when she had gotten married, taken a job at an instructional design company, and transferred to their Marion Town office when John wanted to move to Indiana to be closer to his family. So, for me, this is a bit of insider lore. I am somewhat confident that Marion Town is a stand-in for Indianapolis, or at least one of the neighboring areas, and the name is a nod to Marion County, where Indianapolis is located. The book refers to the general location as the Midwest, but because I'm reading a local author, my brain has already substituted Indiana as our setting. There's a city called Marion between Indy and Fort Wayne, but I had no such luck finding a Marion town. And I didn't expect to find one either. I just wanted to amuse myself for 10 minutes. And as there's lots of Marions around these parts, I wouldn't have been surprised to find that it actually existed. And I'm always interested to see which authors insert real places into their stories and which ones take inspiration from certain areas. At any rate, Katie isn't happy to have been taken away from Louisville, and she's been contemplating moving back. While she's distracting herself with work, she gets word from her boss that he needs her to show around a new hire, but uh-oh, the new hire is her ex-sister-in-law, and there is some bad blood there for sure. Apparently, before the divorce started, she'd offered to help Georgia get a job at her office, and whoops, here she was. Even though Katie is already having a rough time of it for today, it's the first day of her new class. She can't miss it. Gabe had happened to be there. He had been working with the studio owner to get the pictures perfect, and he holds the door open for Katie. She breezes right past him, based on their past interaction, but he doesn't let it get to him, even if he was hoping to see her again. Katie is nervous about the class, but she begins the warm-up along with everyone, and once that portion is finished, they move on to actually using the pole. The lesson will be familiar territory to anyone who's taken a pole dancing class, and I absolutely sympathize with Katie as she made her way around the pole, trying to get any moves down. Anyone who's ever done any kind of movement class might sympathize with her. For me, at least, it's hard to put my body parts where they need to be to get the move right. Everything from pole tricks to dance choreography to even my horseback riding. That's why I do these things, to help me understand and connect to my body better. When the class ends, Katie jumps over to Annabelle to talk about her day. Over margaritas, the girls dish, and we get why Katie is none too happy about the reemergence of her sister-in-law. Apparently, one day, while she was working with Georgia on her resume, Katie felt safe enough to admit that she was having a hard time adjusting to Marion Town, and wasn't particularly happy about the move since she didn't have a support structure anymore. Apparently, Georgia ran off to her brother, told him what Katie had said, and he had initiated the divorce. Katie hadn't even been able to suggest couples therapy. Seriously, this guy is a grade-A douchebag. I'd say his character is over the top, but I know assholes like this actually exist in real life, and it's good that Katie was able to dump him. There's already a strong theme of friendship being established here. Katie feels out of sorts in the area, obviously, but Annabelle seems to have been her rock. This is absolutely a case of women supporting women, and I am here for it. Time passes, and it's the next Monday, and thus the next pole dancing class. After learning how to do a fireman spin, a personal favorite of mine, Katie and Annabelle go out for dinner. Lo and behold, who else should be there but Gabe? Annabelle insists that Katie didn't give him a fair shake, and before they know it, they're talking with him thanks to their mutual association with the pool studio. To Katie's surprise, he asks her if she has ever modeled. He's been working with dancers at Snapdragon with a photo series, featuring women historical art styles and telling their stories through choice of art references and poses. He hands Katie his card and asks her to call if she's ever interested. Katie's not sure what to do with this. Annabelle is practically beside herself with this new development, and Katie is wondering if she could do it. As they head to their respective apartments, Annabelle is giving Katie a pep talk that it doesn't matter what she looks like, that she is still an incredible person, and this might be an opportunity to help her rediscover herself. This novel isn't going all in on the relationship at the start, and it's really refreshing. Katie and Gabe have their own lives, their own problems, and they're putting the work in on themselves to make sure that they are comfortable where they are. There's hints of the will-they-won't-they, but nothing solid enough here that Cupid's arrow has had anything to shoot at. There's a genuine opportunity for an organic relationship here. We also get to see Katie interact with new people outside of the romance. It's pretty common that the heroine finds herself in a new area or town, and the only people she knows or will know come by proxy with a love interest. Here, Katie is making new friends at the pool studio, slowly building the community she's been desperate for since she arrived in Marion Town. As far as Gabe's concerned, though, Katie takes the leap and sets up a not date to get started on the potential photo shoot. As days pass before, though, a problem arises. straight out of rom-com territory, there's a work function coming up soon, and lovely Georgia goaded Katie about plus ones. Katie hopes that if she shows up with someone, maybe Georgia would get off her back and even tell John that she's moved on. I mean, one can hope, but Katie has an idea, and I'm sure you've already figured it out. When she goes to meet Gabe, they begin to brainstorm, and Katie takes that shot in the dark. Will Gabe go to her with her work party and be a tasty bit of arm candy? Well, it turns out Gabe is in need of some arm candy himself. His judgmental family, rather stepmother, has invited him to their Easter dinner, and he's hoping that he can show them that he is actually a responsible adult in control of his life. That way he can have more opportunities to see his younger sister. It's a quid pro quo exchange. If they're going to do this, Gabe offers to take Katie out to dinner, as if they were actually dating. There they get to know each other, talk about each other's pasts and history and whatnot. You know, like a date. Time passes, and we get that slice of life that I am so fond of, our characters living their lives. Katie goes to work, dishing with friends and continuing the pole classes, and Annabelle gets her to sign up for another set of classes, this one focused on the choreography aspect. And then Gabe gets her to come over for a preliminary shoot, and to get to know one another again. You know, so people believe that they're dating, but they're totally not dating. During their not another date, Gabe can tell that her feet are probably really sore, especially since she'd just come from pole class, and a big thing that pole dancers do is stand on their tiptoes and point their feet constantly. It can hurt when you're not used to it. So he offers a foot rub, which is both nice and not for Katie, since her ex had only ever rubbed her feet when he'd wanted sex. I bring this up because it leads to something important. If she was honest with herself, she'd felt aroused, and then disgusted with herself, but more so with John, because he trained her like one of Pavlov's fucking dogs to respond to a foot massage in an erotic way. So she'd come home, brewed a cup of her most comforting herbal tea, and gotten out the old rabbit vibrator she kept for rare occasions when she just wanted physical pleasure. Tired and out of willpower to try to pretend that she didn't find Gabe attractive, she fantasized about him backing her up against a wall. Not only do we have a scene with masturbation, but it's masturbation with a toy, like an actual vibrator. I'd be hard-pressed to remember if any of the books that we've read used vibrators outside of the hardcore BDSM choices, which is kind of dumb. Sex toys are a healthy part of a sexual relationship and can help partners communicate their needs with one another. If anything, if partner A knows how they like to be pleasured, they can then better explain to partner B how they like things. While the scene itself isn't exactly descriptive, just narration of what fantasies Katie has running through her mind, the mention of the vibrator alone is novel and refreshing. Well done. One thing that I've noticed for this novel is how the pole studio is sort of aligning with Katie's path. First, she was at the showcase, still raw from her divorce, not really feeling up to going out for adventures. Then the beginner pole class as she's learning to navigate the world as a single woman, just getting back in touch with herself and her body. And now she's joining Annabelle for this new class set, learning the more sensual side of pole dancing, and this might get her back in touch with her own sensuality. You know what this novel isn't focused on? Katie losing weight. I thought we might have another fit situation here from episode 25. Our story there focused on the heroine as she was desperate to lose weight, so she joined a fitness gym and did all the things one does while focusing on that goal. Katie isn't here to lose weight. She isn't here with a fitness mindset. She is not counting calories, watching the scale, any of that. She is having a good time, making friends, and enjoying a new hobby, and reclaiming herself after her divorce. We have seen the fat stigma, of course, as it relates to her stupid ex, but she isn't getting any pressure from anyone to lose weight off the scale. Just hang out and have fun. And aside from Katie's own internal lack of self-confidence, no one is treating her poorly because of her size. It's not questioned that she can be Gabe's arm candy, and no one calls her out on her size. Between Katie's catch and fit, I know which one I prefer in execution. After one final prep meeting with Gabe and his friend Alex, Katie and Gabe are now facing the trial of Easter Sunday with his family. He picks her up, and after they arrived, Katie starts to double-guess herself. until he leaned across the console and kissed her. Katie's panicky inhale settled into something deeper and in rhythm with Gabe's breathing. This is nice, she thought. Their lips fit together nicely, and he kept it tame, not going tongue spelunking, but the skin-to-skin contact and the fresh smell of his aftershave, it was all unexpected and quite nice. Gabe pulled away, and Katie managed not to whimper a protest. I hope that was okay, he said. Katie nodded. My uncle just walked by, and I know he reports directly to my mom. She nodded again, trying to even out her breathing. Ooh, this fake romance is inching closer and closer to something not so fake, and we just want to get on with it, don't we? The meal goes off without a hitch. Katie manages to pass as girlfriend material, and Gabe gets his much-hoped-for time with his sister. Triumphant, they head back to Katie's apartment where he gives her a massage, and it's just a massage, even if she climbed into his lap for it. He respects her choice, though, and lets it roll right off him. Katie herself isn't sure what she's going for. She's intending to leave town in a couple months. Laying down more roots would make that difficult. Despite all that, though, things are going pretty smoothly. Katie is growing with her new slinky pole dance choreography class, and she and Gabe finally get to have their proper photo shoot. Gabe is certainly trying to figure out if he should pursue her further. Everything is great. And then Katie gets a giant wrench when her ex's attorney sends a letter. Georgia had told John her salary, and I guess Dum Dum thought that Katie wasn't being forthcoming with her salary amount as it related to their divorce. Annabelle talks her down, says that there won't be a case since Katie meticulously keeps her ducks in their rows, but it still leaves a bad taste in Katie's mouth. They go shopping that weekend for outfits for that upcoming showcase. They are performing in it, after all. It gives Katie much-needed girl time and an opportunity for Annabelle to give her a pep talk when Gabe sends Katie a photo from their shoot. The next class in their beginner pole series teaches them something called a pole sit. It's exactly what it sounds like. You sit on the pole. Basically, it's the skin contact that keeps you up, and you have to tilt your hips to keep that contact. Yes, it hurts. Katie is working on it when she slips and falls. She's physically okay, but she asks to come over to Gabe's place as a sort of why-the-hell-not kind of moment. As though the impact of the fall uncorked all the insecurities and emotions she's been feeling, she admits that she's scared and lonely, and then she kisses him. Gabe is not one to decline something nice, especially since it's something he's wanted, and he returns her attentions in full force. The sex that follows is pretty down-to-earth. It's focused on their bodies, how they feel, how they want to make each other feel. They communicate, and words are not spared. It's authentic, if that's a way to describe it, and they take their time. We haven't had much sexy in the majority of the book so far, so an all-around sex fest is here to make up for it. Oh, and they take time to discuss safe sex practices. A plus for me. What is interesting is that they both have a friend check-in session after their romp. Annabelle gives Katie some cautious congratulations. It's great that they had sex, but will they be able to keep their fake relationship very casual now? Gabe tells his friend Alex that Katie might eventually ask him to go steady, but he is not a go steady kind of guy, so he's hoping that they can stay friends. Alex isn't so sure, and she tells him as much, and that Katie might actually be a very good match for him. Again, I am thrilled that both of our mains have an outside support group that they can rely on. I do worry about Annabelle, though. She seems like the sort who could also use the support that she's been giving Katie. Katie decides to invite Gabe over for another night, and as we watch her prepare the bedroom, we can see that she is happy with how things turned out in Marionstown. She's been able to move on from her divorce, reclaimed herself at Snapdragon and with Gabe, and will be ready to start anew when she returns to Louisville. This kind of leaves a sour taste in my mouth, mostly because Katie hasn't told anyone that she's planning to leave. It's almost as if she's used her time here as a vacation and can drop it all when it's time to go home. But she's not really considering the consequences when Gabe arrives. They enjoy some beers, and then they enjoy each other. Gabe has some serious stamina because the narration tells us that they go through 3 condoms. That's a nice touch. They don't say rounds, they say condoms. Again, bringing that safe sex into a very sexy romp. After they're done, however, The chickens come home to roost. As Katie goes off to the bathroom, there's a knock at the door, and it's Annabelle. She's brought over a few things for the upcoming pole showcase, and while she was there, she saw the confirmation letter to Katie's landlord about leaving. Of course, Annabelle is crushed. Katie tries to explain that she hasn't been happy, but Annabelle calls her out on it. Katie isn't happy because she's not investing in her happiness. She's going through the motions and closing herself off to everyone just because she doesn't want to deal with her ex and his sister anymore. Annabelle leaves, and then Katie has to deal with Gabe, who has heard everything. While he wasn't looking for a relationship with Katie, he's been hoping to keep her in his life, a life that is so very often has been filled with loss and abandonment. Katie's heart began to ache from how long he didn't look at her. She started to say something, anything, and he glared at her then. "You don't know me, Katie, but you've become one more reason why I can't let anyone in, because everyone eventually leaves." The protest died in her throat, because of course he was right. She was about to leave, and she hadn't given a single thought to how it might impact him or anyone. Katie accepts her judgment, and it's an agonizing realization. She's been selfish in a way, but I'll give her a little bit of slack here. She's recently divorced, and sometimes protecting her emotional health requires a little bit of selfish attitudes. But she's learned that it is very possible to overdo it, and it didn't take much. After he leaves, Katie essentially becomes a ball of blankets and tears. She takes work off the next day, and hey, I would probably do the same. I'm not going to call this third act separation, because our couple would need to be a proper couple for it to work. And it's not exactly third act either. We're near to the end, but we're not so close that there's only two pages left. And it's a genuine breakup, for lack of a better term. The two of them, mostly Katie, don't see a future at all in any relationship, so they stop investing. Katie spends the day wallowing, eating comfort food at a local cafe, wallowing, shutting down her thoughts when she thinks about Gabe, more wallowing. When she realizes that it's Wednesday and therefore the sexy choreograph class day, she's prepared to drop it. But life doesn't work out that way. Life keeps moving. There's another knock at the door, and it's Miriam, a dancer that she and Annabelle had befriended at the studio. Miriam tells her that they need her for the class because it's a group performance, and without her, things aren't going to work. And Miriam also snarks at her to run towards something for once instead of away from it. Tired of disappointing the people in her life, Katie agrees to go. There's an interlude where we check up with Gabe, and we see him getting chewed out by Alex. She's telling him that Katie's choice to leave hurt him because of his emotional baggage, even though Katie's leaving really had nothing to do with him at all. Alex gets points when she tells him that he's allowed to be upset, his feelings are valid, but he also needs to examine why he's reacting the way he did. It's a typical come-to-Jesus talk, but still good. Back to Katie at Snapdragon, she manages to get through the class for the most part, unsteady as she was. Annabelle wasn't giving her the time of day, obviously, and Katie doesn't push into her space. If Annabelle wants to talk, then she'll talk. Two days go by until she is, and the two women head out to a restaurant to clear the air. Katie apologizes, and Annabelle tells her where she's coming from. Annabelle has been part of the divorced friends group chat for a long time, and it's all too often that a lot of the women who pass through treat it as a temporary friend group. Annabelle had been making a genuine connection with Katie, so it cut deep when she found out what Katie was planning on doing. Katie admits that she was afraid that she couldn't make a home here, since the only reason she'd moved to Marion was because of her ex, but despite that, she's managed to enjoy things about her life here. Now the two have properly made up, and Katie admits that she doesn't know what she wants to do anymore as far as leaving goes. Annabelle asks about Gabe, and Katie is sure that he'll be fine. He was a player before, and he'll move on quickly enough. Before she knows it, though, it's time for her company party, one that she'd hoped Gabe would attend with her, or at least have someone on her arm, but it wasn't looking likely, that is, until a knock at her car window while she's sitting outside the venue. Three guesses who. Gabe apologizes for how he reacted, for what he said and how he said it. His stepmom had invited him to his sister's middle school graduation, and he knew that he had Katie to thank for it, and that they had an agreement, after all. She helped him, so now he's helping her. They arrive at the party, being held at the local zoo's aquatic center, cooler than it sounds, and Katie makes sure that Gabe has a quick rundown of everyone he needs to know about, boss and things. Everything's going pretty smoothly, right up until she hears her ex calling out for her. Gabe had gone off briefly to get her a drink before dinner had started, and when he gets back, he is not a fan of what he finds.
Katie, the man was saying, how have you been? Looks like you finally lost some weight.
She looks so miserable, cringing while opening her mouth to respond that Gabe stepped up and arrived just in time to slide an arm around her shoulders and interrupt.
Hi, I'm Gabe, Katie's date.
And yes, I agree that she looks wonderful.
This is a pretty straightforward situation where we are about to have a villain comeuppance. It might be a simplistic scenario, but we know it'll be cathartic. I'm sure we would all love to have a moment where someone who has wronged us gets to have a very public humiliation, especially when we have the upgrade, as it were, standing right beside us. I do realize that calling Gabe an upgrade is a little objectifying, but it gets my point across. Clearly, John has had too much to drink, loudly introducing himself as, quote, ex-husband of the fat overpaid one. I sincerely hope that anyone who heard that followed up with, I can see why you're the ex, then.
Georgia manages to usher out her drunken brother, and Katie and Gabe enjoy the show. And Gabe finally seems to grasp that Katie is indeed the catch everyone's been telling him she is. After the party, Katie does something we also need more of in romance literature. She takes time to really settle in with herself. She spends the weekend caring for herself, being comfortable in her solitude, giving herself space, to make sure that she really wants to invite Gabe into this space. Monday saw her back at the office, where Georgia apologizes for pretty much everything. She tells Katie that John had washed up after the divorce and convinced himself that Katie was screwing him over completely, all while living at home with their parents. Georgia is planning to move away from their toxic nonsense, and Katie is left to wonder at the strangeness of the world. After a new class at the Pole Studio, Katie is finally ready to reach out to Gabe. He invites her out to a date, and they share an intimate dinner. Gabe shows her a framed portrait of their photo session, asking for her permission to show it in a gallery. She's blown away by how beautiful it is, and agrees. And of course, they head back to her place for the best part of making up, makeup sex. I mean, what else, right? Oh, sure, they came in for some conversation and chocolates, but we all know where this was going to end up. Come on. After their romp, Katie has an endearing moment when she realizes that the showcase was in 2 weeks and was worried it might be weird if they're together. Gabe assures her that he is proud to be with her and he doesn't care who knows. We don't see the showcase itself, just the dress rehearsal, where Gabe is free to take pictures without navigating the audience. He watches as Katie and the rest of the dancers go through their routines, and then gives Katie the surprise at having displayed their photoshoot pictures at the studio.
I just want to squeeze them both, they're so cute.
Our epilogue takes us a couple of months into the future, showing us that Gabe and Katie are still very happy together, and might even move in together soon. It's a sweet ending, just how we like it. And there's a lot to gush about this book, so I'll just jump right into Heather's final score. We start with our cover, of course, with a 4 out of 5. I really like it, personally, and I like to see more covers like it. There's a good use of color, and it's pretty obvious that this cover was made for this book, not just stock photos slapped together. I had my nitpicks, sure, but it's not every day that you can see a romance novel with a pole dancer on it. I'll give drama a 3 out of 5 today. It was just the right amount of drama that I would expect for a slice-of-life rom-com-esque romance novel to have. Not only did we have the tension between our romantic leads, but there was a lot of interpersonal drama as well. Our story didn't focus on just the romance. Our characters had their own lives, and that, I believe, kept everything grounded for the better. Romance gets a 4 out of 5. Gabe and Katie had excellent chemistry, even if they spent most of the book not officially dating. They had separate interests, but they invested in each other to find out what those interests were. And when they had common ground, such as their enjoyment of craft beers, they took time to explore it with each other. They had a genuine connection, and it didn't feel forced when they finally got together. Spice Level will also get a 4 out of 5. While it wasn't exactly a kinky novel, the sex was enjoyable, realistic, and wasn't hidden away behind euphemisms.
and it plays along that perfect line of sex in real life that I oh so enjoy in these novels, where it's not out of place and not shoved in our faces out of the blue. To top it all off, we got instances of safe sex as well as mentions of masturbation. This was real as it can get, and I love it. Finally, realism is another 4 out of 5. I absolutely can see this story happening in real life. A recently divorced woman goes out to reclaim herself and along the way finds friends, community, and a new love. And if you think the pole dancing might lower the score, I promise you it does not. There is probably a pole dance studio in your town. There's 3 not far from my little nowhere town, and probably more on the other side of Indy. You could replace the pole studio with any other activity and the story still works. It's just novel because of the pole. There are places where it gets a little cliche, but they weren't glaring enough to get me to care. With all of that said, what I loved the most about this novel is the parallels between Katie's pole journey and her personal journey. As she gained confidence and skills in the studio, she was feeling more at home in Marionstown. It allowed her to reclaim herself and her body so she could move on emotionally after her divorce. It's probably my favorite detail in the whole book. Now, as it is a debut novel from a self-published author, there are some narrative and construction pitfalls, but I was enchanted by the story enough that I didn't really care about them. Personally, I look forward to what this author has in store for us next, and I hope that she gains a healthy and robust readership for her Snapdragon series. So for my final score, I give Katie's Catch 4 chrome poles out of 5. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Yun Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an HK production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.